I'll be reading Mark chapter 13 in its entirety this morning. As Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings. Do you see all these great buildings?" replied Jesus. "Not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign that they are all about to be fulfilled?" Jesus said to them, "Watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name, claiming, 'I am he,' and he will deceive many. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places and famines. These are the beginning of birth pains. You must be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and flogged in the synagogues. On account of me, you will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all nations. Whenever you are arrested and brought to trial, do not worry beforehand about what to say. Just say whatever is given you at the time, for it is not you speaking, but the Holy Spirit. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. Everyone will hate you because of me, but the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you see the abomination that causes desolation standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down or enter the house to take anything out. Let no one in the field go back to their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that this will not take place in winter, because those will be days of distress, unequaled from the beginning, when God created the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect whom he has chosen, he has shortened them. At that time, if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Messiah,' or, 'Look, there he is,' do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. So be on your guard. I have told you everything ahead of time. But in those days, following that distress, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, people will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And he will send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Be on guard, be alert. You do not know when that time will come. It's like a man going away. He leaves his house and puts his servants in charge, even with their assigned task, and tells the one at the door to keep watch. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks very much, Steve. Well, sorry, it's not really a very long weekend passage that we're looking at today, is it? It's a bit more complicated than some we might normally look at. I read a commentator this week who said this is the most difficult passage in the book of Mark. So good luck to us. Perhaps in the spirit of the long weekend, though, perhaps I'll start by telling you a little bit about how I like to relax. It's a long weekend. Hopefully you've been able to relax a bit this weekend. I love hanging out with others, with friends, with family. I particularly love hanging out with my wife, Annika. But I am at heart an introvert. So a few weeks ago, when I got to have a night all to myself, I was pretty excited about that. Annika had gone away for the night. Miraculously, the kids were asleep by 7:30. That probably makes Annika a bit mad because they never seem to do that for her. But here I was, a night all to myself to enjoy. And so I got out the popcorn, I got out the some chocolate, I think I got out some strawberries, balanced diet's really important. And I jumped onto Netflix, and I quickly came across this movie, which I could tell straight away was right up my alley. Leave the World Behind. Perfect, I thought. Annika's not so much into scary movies, so this would be a good one to watch when she's not here. Looks a bit scary, looks tense, sounds perfect. I got my headphones out so I could have the volume really loud and so I could make it more exciting. Didn't end up being that scary a movie, at least I was only a little bit scared, no, don't have to worry, but it was genuinely tense the whole way through. And this is basically what the movie's about. A family heads out to the beach for a weekend, I think it was a long weekend, and while they're out at their beach house, the world starts falling apart. First of all, their phones stop working, it's a bit unsettling. Then they realize the TV's not working. And then they see this big ship run aground, and what's going on? And then planes start falling out of the sky. And then there's really loud, strange noises everywhere, and they're hearing rumors of attacks, and what's going on? And then animals are doing really weird things and acting strange. And my personal favorite, they try and drive home, but it's too dangerous on the roads because lots of out-of-control Teslas on autopilot are driving around trying to kill people. It's a lot of fun. This is exactly the sort of thing that I enjoy watching for a bit of relaxation. Well, as Steve read out our Bible passage from Mark this morning, I wonder if that's a little bit like the vibe that you got from our passage. Jesus is speaking to his disciples, and he seems to be talking about a time when the world is falling apart. I wonder what you picked up. Verse 7, Jesus said there's going to be wars and rumors of wars. Verse 8, he said there's going to be earthquakes and famines. Verse 14, get ready to flee to the mountains. Verse 19, days of distress. Verse 25, the stars will fall from the sky. The heavenly bodies will be shaken. Jesus seems to be talking about something pretty big. The world being rocked by big events. And so what are we meant to do with this chapter that's just been read out for us? Is this the Bible's version of some sort of scary disaster movie? And if so, should we be afraid? Should we be expecting these things to all happen? Well, I want to show you a few things over the next little while as we look at this together. First of all, I want to show you what Jesus is actually talking about because it can be a bit confusing and the answer is probably a bit different to what we might think at first glance. But I want to show you as well that this is actually a really practical passage. It might not seem that way at first, but it's a practical passage because it gives us great perspective. It helps us think about the world that we live in, and it's actually a passage that really helps us particularly deal with times that are a bit harder, times that are turbulent. So three questions as we look at this chapter together. Number one, what is Jesus talking about? Let's cover that off first. Number two, how is this encouraging us to think? And number three, what is this encouraging us to do? Hopefully that's fairly simple. What is Jesus talking about? How might this shape our thinking? How might this shape our actions? It's good to have Mark 13 in front of you as we have a look at this together, if you've got it. If you don't have a Bible, you can bring it up on your phone. You can just Google Mark 13, it'll pop right up. There's also an outline and some notes on the Sunday Hub as well, if that's helpful for you. But first, what is Jesus talking about? Let's see if we can get this a little bit straightened out, because This is the sort of question that experts spend a long time arguing about and writing books about. And so I'm sorry, even though it is a long weekend, this is the part where we do have to do a bit of harder thinking to try and work out what's going on here. Hopefully you can follow along okay with me. I've actually just written a bit of a summary of what I think is the basic idea going on in Mark 13. I'm going to put it here on the screen for you, but I'm just giving you the first half of my summary. I'm going to give this to you first. I'm going to explain it to you, and then I'm going to come back and give you a second half of my summary. Here's my first part of my summary. I think Jesus is primarily speaking about the time between his ascension. Jesus went up to heaven at the end of his ministry, AD 33. Jesus is primarily speaking about the time between his ascension and AD 70, especially the build up to AD 70 when Jerusalem and the temple would be destroyed. So just think about this. This might be new to some of us. I think Jesus is primarily actually talking about not a time in the future, but something that happened a long time ago. I think he's talking about that time between about AD 33 and AD 70. In the year AD 70, if you don't know, the Jewish people rebelled against the Romans, and the Roman Emperor Titus led his army to Jerusalem. There was a siege for about 4.5 months, and Jerusalem and the temple all end up getting burned and destroyed. That's a historical fact. That's what happened in AD 70. And I think that it's this event in AD 70 that is primarily what Jesus is predicting here when we read Mark 13. Now, why is that what I think? Well, I've got a few reasons for you. We could talk about this for a long time and flesh out all the different arguments. I could say lots more, but I'm going to do a quick summary with 5 quick points that were the 5 that jumped out to me. This is why I think Jesus is primarily talking about this time period of about 40 years. So reason number 1, the context. If you've been with us the last few weeks, you'll know that we've been following Jesus, who's been having conversations in the temple. The temple has actually been a big focus of the last few weeks. And Jesus has been saying that there isn't going to be a need for a temple anymore. He's saying that you don't need a temple with him, with Jesus. If we trust Jesus, we relate to God actually not through a temple, do we? We don't have a temple where we go to relate with God. We relate to God through Jesus, through the relationship that's restored by Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. And Jesus has been talking about this, and Mark 13 is the big climax of all this point that he's been making, actually, because now Jesus is predicting that actually the temple itself will actually be knocked down and destroyed. That's how much we don't need it anymore. You can see that in the first couple of verses of this chapter. It says, as Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings." And Jesus says, "Oh, do you see all those great buildings? Not one stone will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." The context is about the temple. Reason number 2, the question. The context is all about the temple, and then the disciples ask a question, which is also about the temple. They say, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign that they're all about to be fulfilled? They're sitting there, they're actually on the Mount of Olives, so they're looking across the valley at the temple, and they're asking about the temple, and so it makes sense that Jesus tells them about what's going to happen to the temple. Reason number 3, when Jesus starts his answer, he actually seems to quite accurately describe what would end up happening through this time period. I'm looking particularly now at verses 5 to 13. Jesus talks about disciples being handed over to synagogues. He talks about disciples coming before governors and kings as witnesses. He talks about persecution. He talks about the gospel being preached to all nations. Of course, those sorts of things could happen at any time period. But as you think about it, well, one person I read put it this way. He said that this part of Mark 13 actually almost reads like a contents page for the book of Acts. I think that's right. This is exactly what happened through this time period. The disciples were persecuted. They did go and stand before kings and governors. The gospel does go out to all the nations. I think it's those years that Jesus seems to be describing. That's 3 reasons. Reason 4, the specifics. Particularly look at the section between verses 14 and 19. Jesus is talking about Judea, and he says that if you're in Judea, which is where Jerusalem is, flee to the mountains, get out, go up to the mountains. He doesn't seem to be talking about some global world, end of the world sort of event. He's talking about specifics, Judea, the mountains. It's not very useful if we're here in Adelaide where there aren't very many mountains that we could go and hide out in. He's talking about specifics. There's going to be a siege, and he says you need to get out, go to the mountains. He says things like, pray that it's not winter, because if it is winter, then you'll be spending winter in the mountains. As an interesting side note, if people did pray that, then God answered it, because We know from history, the Siege of Jerusalem just happened to be, bam, April to September, right through the Northern Hemisphere summer. It won't be a good time to be pregnant, Jesus said. I've been through three of my wife's pregnancies, and it's not the most fun. And it's pretty bad for her as well. It wouldn't be a great time to go and have to hide in the mountains, that's for sure, if you're pregnant. There's no medical help up there. Sorry, I've been a bit harsh on my wife today. Actually, this was a bit like in the Netflix movie I watched. One of the family, while they were hiding out at the beach, he gets sick. And actually, it's a bit grosser than getting sick. I won't go into the specifics, but don't watch the movie if you're squeamish. It's not a good time to get medical help because the world's falling apart. You're hiding in the mountains. Jesus seems to be talking in specifics. Geography. Go to the mountains. Hope it's not winter. Hope you're not pregnant. And then reason number five, the last thing I wrote down, we could go endlessly into these details, but did you notice verse 30? Jesus is talking about the end. He's just getting to the end of what he's talking about, and he says, truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Some maybe say that Jesus is talking figuratively, and he could mean something a bit more long-term, but as we're trying to figure out what's going on, the obvious answer to me is that he's talking about something more immediate. Some of you will still be alive, he seems to be saying. So the context, the question the disciples ask, the way these predictions line up with the book of Acts, the geographical specifics, the statement about this generation not passing away. I know that's a whole lot of detail. Some of you will find that really interesting. Some of you will find this a little bit dull. But can you see why I think that primarily Jesus has been speaking, I think, about the time between his ascension and the year AD 70? Especially he seems to be talking about this time in the lead up to the temple being destroyed, which is what ended up happening. I think this is mostly what the chapter is about, something that took place a long time ago. But let me then give you the second half of my statement, because if we are thinking, well, okay, if Jesus is talking about something that happened a really long time ago, that's, you know, maybe doesn't mean a whole lot for me. I mean, it might be a good argument that he was who he says he was, because if it was true that he said that in AD 33 and that it did happen in AD 70, well, he did a pretty good job of predicting something. That's interesting. But I do think there's more in Mark 13 for us. Let's have a look at the second half of what I've written here. Jesus is primarily speaking about the time between his ascension and AD 70, especially the build-up to AD 70 when Jerusalem and the temple would be destroyed. But he also uses this mini-apocalypse to point us to how things will be for the whole time between then and the time he returns to judge the world. What I'm saying is, yes, I do think Jesus is focusing on the time leading up to AD 70. But I think he then also takes it further. He's talking about all time after what when he spoke. I think he's also talking about the time we live in now. I think he's also talking about that future time when he will come and return to judge the world. There are hints even in what the disciples ask Jesus, actually. They ask about the temple, but they sort of ask their question in two parts. And Matthew, in his gospel, he gives an account of the same speech, and he puts it a little bit differently. He says in Matthew 24, verse 3, when will this happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? It's actually a two-part question. When is the temple going to be destroyed? That's what you've just been talking about. And when are you going to come back to bring an end to everything? Two-part question. The disciples probably assumed that those two things would go together, that the temple would be destroyed and it would be the end of the world, and Jesus would come back and it would all happen at the same time. But Jesus makes it clear that that's not the case. He gives a lot of specifics about what's going to happen in Jerusalem, what's going to happen to the temple. He talks about what things were going to be like in the lead up to AD 70. We've had a bit of a look at that. But then there are hints, and particularly in the last part of the chapter, verse 32 and after, there are hints that Jesus is also talking about another day. Look what he says in verse 32, about that day, about that hour, no one knows. He can't be talking about the temple anymore because he's just told you lots of things about the temple. He knows about the temple. But now there's another day which is much more mysterious. The day even he doesn't know about. The day when the owner of the house will return. The day that Jesus, God himself, will come back to his world and put things to right. I think it's pretty clear in this chapter, though it is complicated. It's a complicated chapter, but I think when you get into the detail, it's complicated. But I think it's true that Jesus has two things in mind. It was going to be tough. He's talking about the next 40 years. It was going to be tough. Persecution's coming, but trust, keep going. And when it comes time for Jerusalem to be destroyed, get out of there. It's not going to be safe. But what I think is also clear is that Jesus is using that picture of the temple and the build-up to the temple being destroyed. He's using this mini-apocalypse, and he's using it as a picture of what's going to come for the whole world. It's not just a story of those 40 years. It's the story of the entire age. It's the story we live in now. And just like in those 40 years, hard things will happen now. Just like Jesus said, we shouldn't panic. We should trust. We should keep going. And we should hear a warning. As surely as the end came for Jerusalem, we can be assured that one day the end will come for the whole world. And it might be hard, and a lot about that day is unknown, but the message is, if we trust Jesus, it will be okay. And if you're not sure about Jesus, this should encourage us to take seriously the need to actually answer that question. What do we think of him? Was he right in what he predicts? It's a hard passage. It's complicated. There are bits of the passage that people would definitely disagree on and argue about. But I think this idea gets us pretty close to the mark. Jesus is talking about what would happen in Jerusalem, but he wants us to think not just about that time, but he wants us to think about all time and about that day when he will one day return. And he wants us to be ready. So, if this is what our passage is saying, what do we do with it? What is it encouraging us to think? How does it shape our thinking? We're going to change gears a little bit now. If it's all been a little bit technical for you, don't worry. Now's the time to come back. Hopefully, you've got a bit of a gist of what's going on in Mark 13. I want us to try and have some time to think a little bit more practically today, because think about our world today. Think about today, our world here in 2024. We live here in a world that is a lot like what's described by Jesus here. There are wars going on. There are rumors of wars. Christians do get persecuted. There is division in other places. People do turn on each other. How does this prediction of Jesus shape our thinking about this world that we live in? What is it encouraging us to think? Well, I think this passage encourages us to be balanced in our thinking. Balanced in our thinking. What does that mean? Well, let me put a balance before you, some scales. I think this passage encourages us to be calm, but also alert. Calm on one hand, but alert on the other hand. Alert but not alarmed, you could say. The passage encourages us to be balanced. So it depends on where you're at, actually, what you need to hear. Some of us might actually need to hear, actually, we can relax a little bit. We can stay calm. If you watch movies like that movie I watched, I can tell you after I watched the movie, it took me a little while to go to sleep. I was thinking about what would I do? What would really happen if that sort of war broke out suddenly? And if we read the news headlines, it can be easy actually to get quite scared. I read a headline on news.com the other day, and it said, unthinkable as the world marches towards World War III. Jesus said, rumors of wars. There's a rumor of war for you. Or we could be scared about other things, like the way our culture is going. We might think that things are getting worse and worse and worse, and we might be worried about Australia maybe being a less Christian country and thinking that that's going to make things really hard. Maybe it will make it a bit harder to be a Christian if things go certain ways. And Jesus' words are pretty clear. Yeah, some of those things will happen. There will be wars. There will be suffering. There will be turbulence. There will be disasters. There will be persecutions. Yep, it's going to come our way. But he also says if we trust in Jesus, there's no need to be alarmed. We can be calm. Jesus did go up to heaven. He is ruling on his throne. And he will return in the clouds again one day. Some of the stuff we're talking about could cause us to get us down a little bit with what we're thinking about. It could be hard stuff to think about. But there's no need for us to panic. He rules. He's in control. In our family, we've got a little bit of a slogan that our kids know well. We're trying to teach them what's important for us as a family. And we say in our family, we call them our three magical words. Calm, kind, and brave. Calm, kind, and brave. We say, Jesus loves you, so be calm, kind, and brave. He loves us. And he's on his throne. So we can be calm. And we can be brave to face whatever comes our way. Of course, that doesn't mean our kids are always brave, and it certainly doesn't mean they're always calm or kind. But this is a truth that we try and remember. At the same time, though, this is a balance. We should be calm, but some of us might need to hear actually more of the other side. We also need to be alert. if we're chilled out about everything because we just think everything's going to be easy and we're just going to be able to cruise through life, well, no, that's the opposite of what Jesus says. He says to be ready for hard things. And this is the world we're living in. We live in. It's not a happy world. It's a world where there is war, there is sickness, there are disasters. This is why we're looking forward to him coming back, because things aren't as they should be. And can I say, it's easy in Australia, actually, to think that we're pretty untouchable. In Australia, we buy houses. I know it's getting harder and harder to buy a house, but we buy houses, we get a 30-year mortgage, we slowly pay it off, we build up a good super account, and we look forward to a nice retirement. It's kind of what most of us think is ahead, right? This is what Aussies might call the good life. Today's passage makes it very clear. It's not guaranteed. It's not guaranteed. Of course, sickness, disease, accidents, death, family breakdown, business collapses. Things can come on us without warning, unexpectedly, and some of those things will come. That's more at the personal level. Even on a more global level, we might think that Australia will keep getting better and better and be a lovely place to live, that life will just get easier, that we'll get better and better technology, maybe we'll kind of get on top of the environmental situation and we'll figure that out, and we'll move closer and closer to some sort of beautiful utopia where everyone will be fine and get along well with each other. It's not guaranteed. Australia could get better over the next 30 years, it could get worse. You don't need to know too much about history to know that all empires fall. None of the Jewish people would have foreseen that only 40 years later, after Jesus was speaking, their city was going to be destroyed and burned. And we don't want to be alarmist either, but it's not hard for us to imagine, actually, that Australia, things could go south here as well. There are countries that would love to see the West taken down a peg. Any progress we've made on looking after the environment would pretty quickly go out the window if there was a war, wouldn't it? And who knows, Australia could be attacked. Australia could even be defeated. We're not all that strong. There are lots of things we might have that feel like constants, like they're always going to be here. But the reality is, Mark 13 tells us, these things are not certain. These things are not guaranteed. What is certain is that Jesus reigns and that Jesus will return to put things to right. It's those truths that should help us approach life with a calmness, with a peace. It's those truths we should hope in. It's those things that won't let us down. Calm, but alert. We could put this differently and we could kind of put it in the negative. We could say that we shouldn't be paranoid, but we also shouldn't be blasé. People can easily get paranoid when they think about potential wars and what could happen in the world, don't they? In the movie I watched, it was the Doomsday Preppers who came out looking the best with their underground bunkers. Actually, after watching the movie, I was half tempted myself to go and grab a shovel and start digging a bunker in my backyard. But no, Mark 13 tells us we shouldn't be paranoid. I think, by the way, there's a Christian version of being paranoid about all these end time things as well. Analyzing every global conflict, counting the wars, guessing for all the signs and trying to piece it together. Just to be clear, Jesus, he gave some clear signs about what was going to happen to the temple in AD 70, but about the time when he was going to return, well, he said no one knows. He said no one knows when that time will come. We can't figure out when Jesus is going to come back. We're not going to guess it. I know in some circles Christians like speculating about that sort of stuff, Jesus' timing and that sort of thing. At one level, a little bit of speculation isn't going to hurt anyone as long as we know that it's just speculation. Jesus has made it clear that we can't put everything up on that pinboard and get out the red pieces of thread and connect all the dots and figure out the day when he's going to come back. We can't do it. Every generation has wars. Every generation has disasters. Every generation has rumors of wars. Every generation has earthquakes, famines. Jesus says, don't be alarmed. These things can remind us that the end is coming and that we need Jesus to come back. But we don't know when it will come. All we can do is be ready. And of course, at the other end of our thinking, that means we shouldn't be blasé. I think we know what blasé means, don't we? We don't want to be paranoid, but at the other hand, we don't want to be blasé. We don't want to be naively waiting around thinking that nothing bad is ever going to happen. When things are good, we should appreciate them. When things are hard, we shouldn't be too surprised. Calm but alert. Not paranoid, but not blasé. Hopefully you can see, this is practical, isn't it? It's practical for us. It's practical as we chat to others who are doing it tough. And so lastly then, what If this is how Mark 13 is encouraging us to think, what is Mark 13 encouraging us to do? Well, there's not too much to say here, but three last practical thoughts as we finish. What should we do? I think we should watch, we should act, and we should trust. I think what we've read today encourages us to watch. That's how Jesus finishes what he has to say, isn't it? Verse 37. What I say to you, I say to everyone. Watch. What is Jesus getting at here? I don't know if you've seen all the virtual reality goggle things that you can get these days. Apple has these ones available now, the Apple Vision Pro. They're about $8,000 or something, so needless to say, I've never given them a go. But you put them on, and they literally can change the way you see the world. They can make things brighter. They can give you virtual computer screens to work on. They can put you in a driver's seat of a Formula One car. They can transport you to a different world or take you to Paris or a different part of the world. Now, this might be a little bit harsh. I don't mean it harshly, but I do think in Australia we can sometimes act a little bit like we're walking around with these goggles on. We like to pretend that the world is better than it is. We see the good things, the happy things, and we'd rather not think too much about the hurt and pain that is around our world. I think when Jesus says to watch, he's encouraging us to take the goggles off. He's encouraging us to see the world how it really is, see the brokenness, see the need for Jesus, actually see the truth that people are hurting, see that he's on his throne, and watch for his return because we know we desperately need it. Watch. Second thing I think Mark 13 wants us to do, act. I think if we're seeing the world clearly, I think then we'll be ready to act. Act perhaps by speaking to others about Jesus. Going back to that bit about kind of having balanced thinking, I reckon if we're blasé about the state of the world, we probably won't bother really talking to others about Jesus too much. On the other hand, if we're too scared, we might be then afraid to tell others about Jesus, too worried about what's going to happen. But if we're calm and alert, I think we'll be ready to share the good news of what Jesus has done. I think the promise Jesus gives us here is true for us as well. The Spirit will help us. Let's be calm, let's be alert, and let's tell people what we believe is true. I think if what we've looked at today is true, then there's a lot less certainty in this life than people might think. And what is certain is that Jesus is on his throne, and Jesus is coming back, and that's good news. It's good news to share with people, especially if they're feeling some of the turbulence in the world at the moment. Watch, act, lastly, trust. If Jesus is on his throne, if Jesus is coming back to put the world to rights, well, then we can trust in whatever comes our way. We've seen today something of just how sure Jesus' words are. He spoke about the destruction of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple, and just as he said it was, he would, it came to pass. His words are sure, as he says in verse 31, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. His promises are sure. His forgiveness is sure. As we trust him, we're safe with him. Whatever comes of this world, whatever life might throw at us, the ups or the downs, we can trust that he's on his throne. And we can trust that he's coming again. And if we trust him, well then ultimately we have nothing to fear. Amen. As we've been doing through Lent, we're going to finish now with a couple of minutes just to think about what we've heard and reflect. There are two questions on the screen. You might find this helpful to think about. And we're going to take just a moment on our own to do some reflecting. You might like to pray, reflect. The two questions are this: how do I feel about the state of the world today? And is there anything I need to give over to Jesus today and trust him with? And then in just a minute, Jane's going to get up and take us to what's next.